Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Welcome to Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm your host, Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live this morning from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma, on Friday, March 8th. And it's a really foggy day outside. You can barely even see the trees in the distance through the window outside of our recording studio here. It's a very beautiful, thick fog out there. Do words matter? Do days matter? Oftentimes, we probably don't think so. And yet, the third and fourth of the Ten Commandments have everything to do with words that we speak and a specific day of the week. As we covered last week, the first two commandments are all about whom we worship and how we worship. The third commandment is about the way we speak God's name. So you can see right now, all the commandments are building on top of each other. The basis for our program today is the Philadelphia Church of God booklet, The Ten Commandments, God's Unchangeable Laws for a Happy Life. You can find this for free at thetrumpet.com. And this is really a booklet that should be in every school on earth. It should probably have a place in every office building, in every part of society. Because if people actually applied the principles of this booklet to the best of their ability, all the problems really on earth would disappear. Chapter 3 of this booklet is titled, Use God's Name Truthfully. Let's look at where this command is in the Bible. Exodus 20 and verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that takes his name in vain. And as Mr. Dennis Leap, the writer of this booklet, points out, this is mainly talking about the way we speak God's name. You can see that from the Hebrew meanings, or the meanings of the Hebrew words in this verse. But as he also points out, it does extend even to our actions. Think about it. There's a letter of the law and there's a spirit of the law. It's very important that we keep the Ten Commandments as far as what those commandments literally say. But what about the spiritual principle? What about expanding the intent of that law so that it does really cover every possible human infraction? Whenever you apply the spirit of the law with the third commandment, it's not just talking about the words we speak, but even our actions. Do our actions properly represent God's name? If we claim to be true Christians, we're named Christians after Jesus Christ himself. Are we representing that name Christian the right way through our actions, through our deeds, and not just through our words? What if we talked righteously all the time? What if we were extremely careful every time we spoke not to use God's name in vain, but at the same time were involved in all types of pagan practices, all kinds of sins in our actions? Wouldn't that be bringing shame on God's name? Wouldn't that be the ultimate hypocrisy, to speak righteously while living unrighteously? So we do see that whenever you truly apply the spirit of the law and the third commandment, it does really extend out and intertwine with the other nine of the Ten Commandments. It does really govern every action that we take. On page 34, Mr. Leap talks about the importance of a name. What is in a name? Here it says, God's name reveals his high rank, authority, interests, deeds, and, most of all, his righteous character. In fact, the Bible shows that God has many names. Why? No one name can adequately express God's fullness. Each name carries an important meaning. We must hold great honor and respect for all of God's names. The implication there is pretty obvious. If we need to have respect for all of God's names, it's important to know what those names are. And how can we learn all of those names unless we're studying our Bible to find out what those names are and to understand the meaning of those names, how those names do properly match up with his perfect character. So we see that a huge way that we can apply and uphold the third commandment is through Bible study, by studying who God is, because then we can better respect him. We'll see the magnitude of his perfection, and we will be properly motivated to respect him once we understand that. Now, the one thing that really struck me when I studied this chapter is that there are probably dozens of different ways to actually break this commandment. That really does show the care we must take when we're trying to uphold it. It says here on page 36, God prohibits attaching his name to false doctrine or heresy. If a certain religious group decides to say, this is the particular set of practices that God would approve of, and they're wrong when they say that, well, that's a way of taking God's name in vain. If we say that we're doing something in the name of God, but God wouldn't actually sanction those actions, then that is a way of breaking the third commandment. Back on page 35, it says, God prohibits the use of his name in connection with evil or wickedness. God is righteous character. God is not capable of doing evil. He demands that his name not be associated with any kind of evil act of human beings. And then the example is given of wars that are carried out in the name of God. Sometimes maybe a religious group or a particular nation says, we are going to war because it is God's will. Well, what if they're wrong about that? What if it's not actually God's will for them to go to war? Then they are using God's name in vain. They are attaching God's name to an action that he does not support. And then page 36, another way we can break this commandment. This commandment also prohibits using God's name casually or for a useless purpose. And then a little bit farther down, it says, God considers a person who abuses his name as spiritually unclean. How we use God's name privately and publicly reveals the quality of our spiritual life. The acid test of our spiritual cleanliness is our attitude toward God's name. And again, that's true because it really does reveal the quality of our Bible study, the depth of our understanding of God's character. And the more we understand God's character, the more we'll respect God himself, and the more care we will take to avoid using his name the wrong way. There's a lot of information in this chapter. Again, chapter 3 of the Ten Commandments booklet, which you can find at thetrumpet.com, about all of God's different names. And it is really important that we understand those names. Here toward the end of this chapter, Mr. Leap gives a few more different ways that it is possible to break the Ten Commandments, or specifically to break this third commandment of taking God's name in vain, or against taking God's name in vain. It talks about how in the entertainment business, it is extremely common to basically write into most every show or movie euphemisms or direct instances of taking God's name in vain. And decades ago, they used to call that profanity. It used to be just as serious to take God's name in vain as it is to curse. And of course, now no one really cares about committing either of those two things, or doing either of those two things. It says here on page 39, look at how far we've degenerated in our language and conversation. And I've noticed quite a few times, if I'm watching a movie or a TV show, it seems like the ultimate punchline, the funniest moment of the show or the movie, or the climax of the action directly involves taking God's name in vain. Who might be behind that? Who is the one devising this strategy to make us okay with taking God's name in vain? There is an evil spirit power who would influence us in that way. It talks here about taking oaths. You know, saying I swear to God would be wrong because, again, what if we ended up breaking that vow? Then you'd be attaching God's name to a lie. Matthew 5 talks about letting your yes be yes and your no be no. And then page 41 says, the honest word of human beings with character is to be trusted far more than a dishonest person swearing in the name of God. So if you are a person who tells the truth, an honest, trustworthy person, your word is far more important than the word of someone who just makes an empty promise but then attaches God's name to it. There is a such thing, too, as profane religious titles. Calling someone in a religious office our father or a reverend is not appropriate. It is appropriate, though, to compare a spiritual office in the Bible to that of a father. There is an important distinction there. The Apostle Paul himself in 1 Corinthians said that he was like a spiritual father to the brethren. But he did not have the brethren directly address him as father. Quite a big difference. And finally, pages 42 and 43, Mr. Leap is directly addressing religious people, the so-called Christians of this world. What if we repeatedly say God's name in prayer? Doesn't that take away from the importance of his name if we're just vainly repeating his name? In fact, it says here on page 42, vainly repeating God's name is a heathen practice. We must reverence God's name even in our praying. It can be easy to say, God, please give me this. God, please grant that. But it is important to make sure that we avoid just saying it to the point where it loses meaning. A general rule, if we're not sure whether something we're about to say would be taking God's name in vain, just avoid saying it. Page 42 again, religious hypocrisy is a violation of the third commandment. So like I said earlier, a lot of people might try to speak righteously, but at the same time, a lot of those same people say that the Ten Commandments are done away. That is attaching their personal beliefs to God's name, saying that somehow God gives the authority to abolish his own Ten Commandments. That's the way they live. That's their belief system. It's anti-law and it's anti-God. That is a direct way to take God's name in vain by attaching God's name to the abolition of the Ten Commandments, which obviously God would hate. And then finally, page 43. Holding reverence for God with our speaking is clearly not enough. We must strive to obey God's word and commandments. We must desire to do God's will. Again, the spirit of the law really is the most important. So that's the third commandment, that you shall not take God's name in vain. Moving on to chapter 4 of the Ten Commandments booklet. This is titled, Remember God's Sabbath Day. So it is really amazing, like I mentioned earlier, just how these commandments perfectly build on top of each other. Even the order of the Ten Commandments is divinely inspired. Think about the first one. When you're talking about worshiping a god or gods, whatever it might be, it's important to know which god or gods are right, which ones actually hold authority, and which ones we should actually worship. So the first commandment shows us which God is the right God to worship. Secondly, God shows us how to worship him, specifically by not having idols or a physical representation of him that tries to aid in our worship. And then thirdly, it even talks about making sure that the words we speak are not taking his name in vain. And of course, that does apply to our actions too. But then we get to this fourth commandment, and I'll just read it here first. Exodus 20 and verses 8 through 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." Again, that's Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. Notice how long the description of that commandment is. Like I mentioned last episode, it's one of the two test commandments, along with that second commandment of not having idols. And that's why God goes into so much detail. God really knew ahead of time, before he gave these commandments at Mount Sinai, that these would be the two commandments that mankind would have the most difficulty keeping. And that's why, if you study into any religion of this world, definitely directly connected to all of those different practices are statues, idols, images, pictures, paintings, whatever it might be, depictions of their pagan gods. It's rampant in every religion in this world. That's a direct sin against the second commandment. And then look here at the fourth commandment. It's talking about the Sabbath day, keeping one specific day, the seventh day of the week. It's been that way since the recreation week of the earth. The seventh day is Saturday, not Friday, not Sunday, not Wednesday, or any other day that human beings decide. It is the Sabbath day. And yet, who keeps the Sabbath day right? The Jews are known for keeping the Sabbath day, but even they have added hundreds of extra restrictions that make the Sabbath a burden. They don't even keep it properly. Traditional Christianity does not keep the Sabbath day. They have taken it upon themselves to change that day of the week to Sunday. So again, God knew, based on the actions of human beings before the Ten Commandments were delivered, that these would be the two commandments most difficult for humans to keep. And that remains true to this day. That's why hardly anyone keeps the Sabbath, and hardly anyone, even more so, actually keeps the Sabbath the right way. Here's page 47. It says, "At creation, God took the seventh day and blessed and sanctified it." The word blessed means that the seventh day has God's favor upon it. The word sanctified means that God set apart the seventh day for holy use. No other day of the week has God's favor or is set apart. A little bit further up the page, actually, page 47 also just shows that the Sabbath is something that's been around for as long as human beings. Page 47, Bible history shows that the Sabbath is as much a part of the creation as the night, day, sky, animals, or even man. Man cannot change what God has created. What man can change night into day or day into night? It is impossible. So that's something to think about. We wouldn't try to change the other elements that God created during that seven-day recreation week where he renewed the earth and prepared it for man to rule it. We couldn't change the day into the night. We couldn't change animals into plants or vice versa. We couldn't change land into water or vice versa. And we should not try to change God's day to another day of the week. It is what it is, and we don't have the authority to change it. The Sabbath is God's gift to us. So why would we do away with it? Why would we trample upon it? Page 49 is talking about the manna miracle. In ancient Israel, God gave manna from heaven. So basically, like you could maybe compare it to like a golden wafer or some sort of sweet bread. And every day of the week, it would basically fall from the sky, if I remember that correctly. And so they would always have something to eat every day of the week. And yet, on Friday, the day before the Sabbath, they were instructed to go out and gather twice as much to eat. So every day of the week, they'd go out, they'd gather just enough to eat that day because overnight, the manna would spoil. But then on Friday, they'd gather twice as much to eat, enough for Friday and enough for Saturday. on Friday night, the manna wouldn't spoil like it did every other day of the week, because God was teaching the Israelites to prepare on Friday to keep the Sabbath by resting. They were not to go out in the fields on the Sabbath day and work to get their food. They were to have that prepared ahead of time. And by God's miracle, on that Friday night, the food did not go to waste like it did every other night of the week. So that shows us the importance of preparing for the Sabbath. It's not just what we do on the Sabbath, but it's what we do beforehand. You know, there are a lot of tangible ways that we can do work or make sure that our responsibilities are taken care of before the Sabbath comes up. So, for example, we don't have to go to the gas station and fill up the gas tank on the Sabbath, or we don't have to worry about maybe our worldly employer trying to ask us to come in for the Sabbath because we didn't get something done earlier. Whatever it might be, maybe cleaning up the house to make the Sabbath extra special. These are all things that we especially focus on doing on a Friday before the Sabbath even arrives. The Sabbath is not a Jewish day. Mark 2, verses 27 through 28 say, and this is Christ himself speaking, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath." Okay? It's made for man. It's not made for the Jew. That doesn't say that at all. We are all human beings, and the Sabbath is for every one of us. And ideally, every human on earth would be keeping the Sabbath. It's not something that was done away with. This is something in the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments that even were in existence before God delivered them to Israel at Mount Sinai. These are part of his law. These are part of God's character. They are in force to this day. You can see that in Exodus 31 and verse 13. God is speaking to Moses here. "Speak you also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you." Okay, it's a sign throughout your generations. And then verse 17, it calls it, I believe it's verse 18. It's basically saying that it's an everlasting covenant. It's something that will last forever. Forever. Not something that's over when the old covenant is over and replaced by the new covenant. It's something that lasts forever. And so if God did away with the Sabbath at any point, that would make God a liar. He's saying here that the Sabbath is supposed to last forever, and not only that, it identifies God's true people. His one true church to this very day is the only group on earth that keeps the Sabbath the right way. On page 52 and 53 as well, they give us some details here about how to keep the Sabbath the right way. It says, "The Sabbath is 24 hours of holy time, from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. We should do holy things like prayer, Bible study, and meditation. We should saturate our minds with the concepts and ideas that are on God's mind. This brings us into a closer relationship with Him. It is a day for worshiping God with people of like mind in formal services. It is also a day for fellowship, speaking about the things of God with others. We should avoid speaking our own words, discussing our jobs or the latest sports game or other entertainment interests. There are times on the Sabbath when we should do good acts for those who are sick or in need." So this is practical. This is real. This is something that we can apply one day out of the week, really 2 days out of the week when you add in the preparation day. It's not just some thought or some ethereal idea. This is something that we can put into practice in our lives, and it really is a great way to rejuvenate physically, but also to labor spiritually and draw closer to God. Imagine if God had given us this Sabbath day first in the Ten Commandments. Okay, so we know that the Sabbath day is God's day, but if it's the first commandment, we don't know which God is the true God we're supposed to be worshiping. We don't know how we should worship God, and we don't know how we should uphold God's authority through our speech and through our actions. the first three commandments have to come first so that we can better fulfill the fourth commandment. So again, that does show you the level of thought and planning that God put into delivering these commands for human beings to keep. Well, that's just a brief summary of chapters 3 and 4 of the Ten Commandments booklet. You can get your free copy at thetrumpet.com, and I would urge you to do so. We have now talked about the first four commandments, which are all about man's relationship with God. The last six commandments are about man's interactions with each other, and we will get into that starting next week. Until then, I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.